Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving headfirst into a topic that's really reshaped global economics, global politics over the past 3 years or so. The massive Western sanctions campaign against Russia.
Mm-hmm. Massive is the word.
Yeah, we're talking about an unprecedented scale of international effort here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thousands of individuals, entities blacklisted, entire economic sectors restricted.
Right.
Trade channels completely redrawn by all these regulatory barriers. It's a colossal undertaking, a truly ambitious attempt to exert pressure.
Absolutely. The sheer ambition is undeniable.
And it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Given all this activity, all these announcements, what kind of impact has it actually had on the ground?
That's the billion-dollar question, really.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because look, on paper, the sheer volume of these measures, it looks incredibly impressive. You see the numbers, the lists?
Yeah, the numbers are huge.
But our deep dive into the sources, well, it reveals a somewhat uncomfortable truth behind all that activity. So the central question we're grappling with today is, are these Russian sanctions truly working as intended?
That's exactly right. And our mission in this deep dive is to move beyond just the headlines, beyond those often cited impressive numbers.
Okay.
We're going to examine the specific design flaws that the research suggests are kind of embedded in UK and EU sanctions policy.
Design flaws.
Interesting. Yeah, these flaws, according to our sources, they've led to a very uneven, often unexpected impact. It's turned sanctions into what some are now calling more symbol than solution.
More symbol than solution. Wow.
So we're here to distill what's most important for you, explaining not just what's happened, but critically, why it matters for understanding global policy and its real-world consequences. You know, not just for Russia, but for the future of sanctions themselves as a tool.
And trust me, as we start peeling back these layers, it gets quite fascinating. We're going to explore concepts like blanket targeting, how sanctions have sometimes maybe morphed into political theater.
Mm-hmm. Performance, almost.
Exactly. Performance. And we'll ground this discussion in some very real, very human examples of how these policies have actually played out for individuals. Mm-hmm. For me, seeing these broader policy concepts hit real people, well, here's where it gets really compelling.
Absolutely. The human element is crucial.
So let's start where our sources suggest a core problem lies, the very design of these sanctions, particularly this contrast between, you know, blanket targeting and real precision.
Right.
The stated goal, obviously, is strategic pressure, but the research describes the actual implementation as more like, well, like dragnet operations rather than surgical tools.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Can you help us unpack what they mean by that? Why is that such a critical flaw?
Absolutely. So blanket targeting, it essentially means that the lists of sanctioned individuals and entities just keep growing and growing, often based on what the material calls, you know, tenuous associations rather than demonstrable direct wrongdoing.
Tenuous associations? Like what?
Well, think about it. A fleeting connection in an old photograph from maybe a decade ago.
Right.
A long dormant business tie that was maybe tangential at best, or even just the appearance of proximity to influence. Sometimes that seems to be enough to justify these pretty punitive measures.
Wow. So not necessarily direct involvement in anything problematic.
Not always, no. And the problem here, and it's a significant one, is that this approach often ends up punishing what our sources refer to as peripheral figures.
Peripheral figures.
Yeah, people who are, frankly, far removed from Russia's strategic core, individuals who really have a little or no capacity to influence Kremlin policy.
I see.
Meanwhile, and this is the crucial part, that the underlying structures of power.
Right, the actual targets you'd think they want.
Exactly. The truly strategic assets, the key decision makers, the central economic engines that the sanctions are meant to disrupt, while they often remain largely intact.
It's like
trying to fell a tree by snipping off individual leaves instead of, you know, aiming for the trunk or the roots.
That sounds incredibly complicated to navigate then, even for the people whose job it is to enforce them correctly.
Oh, incredibly.
I mean, the criteria are so broad and the associations potentially so tenuous, it almost feels like almost anyone could be caught in that net.
That's the risk.
Did your sources indicate how challenging this makes compliance, even for, like, big, well-resourced organizations?
They certainly did. And to illustrate this complexity, the research mentions that since 2022, over 55 law firms have actually reported breaches of UK sanctions rules.
55. Wow.
Yeah. And here's the kicker, right? These aren't necessarily cases of deliberate evasion or, you know, malicious intent.
Okay.
They're often examples of just how convoluted the compliance landscape has become. Even seasoned institutions, you know, these big global firms with vast resources, dedicated legal teams.
The experts.
The experts. They're struggling immensely to navigate these regulatory webs flawlessly. It really highlights a system that's so intricate, so opaque, that mistakes are almost inevitable.
So it makes you wonder if even the legal eagles are flapping, struggling to understand and comply.
Yeah.
What hope do mere mortals have? And what does this constant struggle, even for experts, say about the overall effectiveness, maybe even the fairness, of the system?
That's a critical point.
It feels like this complexity, this kind of scattershot approach, it feeds right into something else our source has highlighted.
Mm.
The idea that sanctions have, in many ways, morphed from being just a foreign policy tool into something more like, well, political theater.
Political theater. Yeah, what's fascinating here is how governments have often come to measure the success of these sanctions.
How so?
Well, they tend to frame each new announcement for the headlines, right? Consistently emphasizing the ever-growing number of people and companies added to the list.
Right, you see those press releases. Another 100 names added.
Exactly. It creates this kind of spectacle that suggests progress, suggests toughness.
Mm-hmm.
But it rarely actually demonstrates tangible results on the ground in terms of, you know, altering the Kremlin's behavior. This logic of more is better. It inadvertently creates really strong incentives to prioritize these symbolic gestures over substantive outcomes.
So image over impact.
In a way, yes. It's simply much easier for governments to showcase a long list of names frozen out of financial markets, project that image of resolve to a domestic audience,
right,
than it is to definitively prove that these restrictions have genuinely altered Moscow's calculations or meaningfully weakened its war machine.
Okay.
The political mechanisms at play mean that sometimes public perception of action can take precedence over the nuanced, difficult work of achieving precise strategic impact.
That really challenges the common perception we might have about how sanctions are supposed to be effective or what success even looks like in this context.
It absolutely does.
So if the focus shifts towards this kind of theater, like you said, it implies a willingness to sacrifice maybe precision for visibility.
Potentially, yes.
And that reliance on guilt by association that we talked mm-hmm. about earlier, mm-hmm. it doesn't just create complexity for institutions. It really compounds the problem by hitting individuals directly, doesn't it?
It really does.
Did your sources find specific, maybe even stark examples of how this policy plays out for actual people?
Indeed. And the research points to a key case that really exemplifies this. The UK Supreme Court's recent decision in Schwedler v. Secretary of State.
Okay, Schwedler.
Yeah. This involved a British citizen, Eugene Schwedler, whose assets were frozen worldwide.
British citizen. Oh.
Yes. And here's the crucial detail, the real core of the problem. It wasn't because of any unlawful activity on his part.
Right.
It was solely due to his past, admittedly decades long, association with Roman Abramovich.
Just the association.
Just the association. And Lord Leggett, in a truly blistering dissent, warned that the case rested on what he called flimsy reasons and, quote, armchair theories.
Wow. Strong words from a Supreme Court judge.
Very strong. The material emphasizes that Schwedler had no political influence in Russia and, crucially, no resources that could be demonstrated to directly strengthen its war effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yet his life was essentially upended, his assets frozen globally.
Mm-hmm.
Officials, according to the sources, even admitted this was largely intended as a public signal of resolve.
A signal using an individual.
Exactly. This judgment starkly illustrates how these Russian sanctions often conflate mere association with actual culpability. It effectively sacrifices fairness, individual liberty even, for visibility and political signaling. It's a powerful, concrete example of the personal consequences of these design flaws we're discussing.
That's quite a heavy cost for an individual to bear, especially when the legal arguments against it, like from Lord Leggett, are so strong.
Extremely heavy.
Given such a strong judicial dissent, did your sources indicate any pushback from policymakers, maybe? Or a reconsideration of how association is defined in these cases? Or is that desire for the public signal, as you put it, just too strong to overcome?
Well, that's a crucial question, isn't it? And what the research suggests is that while there's definitely definitely judicial skepticism, like in the Schwidler case.
Right.
The political impulse for visible action for that signal often overrides these concerns about fairness or precision.
The politics wins out.
It seems to. The difficulty lies in the fact that defining association precisely, especially when you're dealing with complex, often opaque international systems, is incredibly hard.
I can imagine.
And frankly, broad definitions are just easier to implement quickly when there's pressure to act. So while the Schwidler case was maybe a wake-up call for some, the systemic pressures to maintain a broad scope for sanctions, they remain significant. It really highlights this tension between, you know, the rule of law and due process on one hand and the immediate demands of foreign policy on the other.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when you factor in those political pressures.
Yeah.
And building on that, our sources identify two more really troubling trends that seem to stem from this same kind of broad brush approach.
Yeah.
The criminalization of compliance failures, even technical ones, not deliberate evasion, and this unsettling concept of retroactive punishment.
Yeah, those are deeply concerning.
It sounds incredibly harsh and really prone to unintended consequences.
It truly is. Let's look at a couple examples that really bring this into focus. First, there's Herbert Smith Freehills, a big global law firm.
Okay, I know the name.
Right. They were fined £465,000 for what were described specifically as technical breaches.
Technical breaches, so not trying to sneak money out or anything.
No, exactly. The important distinction here, as the research clarifies, is that this wasn't about deliberate circumvention of the rules, nor was it malicious. It was rather due to what was called the sheer impossibility of navigating them flawlessly.
Wow.
Given the complexity we just talked about. This case highlights a system where, even when mistakes are arguably inevitable, given the labyrinthine nature of the regulations,
right,
they are still heavily penalized. Potentially career-endingly penalized.
So it sounds like the system is creating a kind of perverse incentive.
Yeah.
Either you try to navigate this impossibly complex web and risk massive fines if you make an honest mistake, or you simply avoid engagement altogether, maybe even legitimate business activities, just to be safe.
Right.
What does that do to broader economic activity? Or just confidence in the rule of law?
Exactly. It creates a chilling effect. There's no doubt about it. Businesses, particularly those with international operations, they become incredibly risk averse.
Understandably.
Yeah. They might pull back from regions or types of transactions where there's even a remote chance of inadvertently falling afoul of these complex rules simply because the cost of a technical, non-malicious error can be so devastating.
Right.
And this can impact legitimate trade, investment, even humanitarian efforts sometimes, creating all sorts of collateral damage well beyond the intended targets of the sanctions.
And the other trend, retroactive punishment.
Yes. And then there's the equally, if not more, concerning case of John Ormerod. He's a 74-year-old finance veteran.
Okay.
He was accused of facilitating Russian oil transactions that, and this is crucial, were entirely legal at the time they were undertaken.
Entirely legal at the time.
Entirely legal at the time. So if we connect this to the bigger picture,
yeah,
it shows how these sanctions frameworks can start to, well, morph from deterrence into retroactive punishment.
That seems fundamentally unfair.
It raises huge questions about fairness and predictability. It leaves individuals, often those making good faith business decisions based on the legal landscape as it existed then, exposed to truly devastating consequences long after the fact for actions that weren't illegal when they did them.
That's a powerful point about retroactive punishment. It really erodes trust, doesn't it?
Hugely.
I mean, if the rules can change and punish you for past perfectly legal actions, how can anyone, an individual, a company, plan or operate with any certainty?
You can't.
Are there discussions in the sources about the legal or even the ethical implications of this erosion of certainty?
There are indeed significant concerns raised about this. This kind of retroactivity fundamentally undermines a core tenet of most legal systems. The principle that laws should apply prospectively, looking forward, not backward.
You need to know the rules of the game before you play.
Precisely. When laws are applied retroactively, it creates an environment of deep legal uncertainty, and it can be seen as a rather arbitrary exercise of state power.
Mm.
The sources highlight that this approach can lead to a profound loss of trust, not just in the sanctions regime itself, but potentially in the broader legal and regulatory environment of the countries imposing them.
Okay.
It signals that even playing strictly by the rules doesn't guarantee protection, which, you know, for an international financial hub like London, for example, could have pretty serious long-term consequences on its reputation and its attractiveness for business.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So these aren't just abstract policy issues we're talking about. They have very real and often profoundly unfair impacts on people's lives, their livelihoods, and on the stability of international economic relations.
Okay, so if we pull all these threads together, now the blanket targeting catching peripheral figures, the tendency towards political theater over, you know, demonstrable impact, the very real human cost of guilt by association, and then these troubling trends of criminalizing mistakes and retroactive punishment, it really does paint a picture of, well, systemic weaknesses, doesn't it?
It certainly seems to.
So what does this all mean for the future of sanctions as a viable foreign policy tool?
Absolutely. The long lists of sanctioned individuals that policymakers often highlight, well, while they look visually impressive on a press release, they're actually described by our sources as poor indicators of success in achieving the real strategic objectives.
Okay. Not a good measure.
Not necessarily, no. While these sanctions have undoubtedly created disruption for the Russian economy and certainly for parts of its elite, their scattershot nature and all the issues we've just discussed have ultimately, according to this research, undermined legitimacy and credibility.
Undermined their own credibility.
Yeah. So what does this all mean? Well, the critical risk here is pretty profound. Instead of weakening the Kremlin in a decisive, targeted way, these measures actually risk weakening confidence in sanctions themselves as a viable policy tool for the future.
Weakening the tool itself.
Exactly. If the international community, and indeed future adversaries, begin to perceive sanctions as being more symbolic than truly effective, or perhaps as tools used arbitrarily or unfairly, then their deterrent power, their very teeth, will be significantly dulled. Future adversaries might simply factor that diminished threat into their calculations, making sanctions less effective in deterring aggressive actions in future crises. This fundamentally shifts the chessboard, really, and limits diplomatic options down the line.
That's a powerful and, frankly, quite concerning statement. You paint a picture of significant systemic weaknesses and potentially a crisis of faith in the tool itself.
That's the concern raised, yes.
Is there any counterargument from the sources, perhaps from those who design these policies? Maybe they defend the current strategy or highlight successes that aren't immediately obvious.
That's a fair question. The sources do acknowledge that these are incredibly difficult tools to deploy effectively, especially against a large, complex, and relatively integrated economy like Russia's. Proponents of the current strategy might argue that even the symbolic disruption, the constant hassle, the need for Russia to adapt and find workarounds that itself imposes a cumulative cost, even if it's not immediately decisive in changing behavior.
A war of attrition, maybe.
Something like that.
Yeah.
They might also point to the genuine difficulty of gathering the kind of precise, irrefutable evidence needed for much narrower, purely evidence-based sanctions designations, especially in a conflict situation or against opaque regimes.
Yeah, getting that proof must be hard.
Extremely hard. So in their view, perhaps some level of broadness, some casting of a wider net, is maybe a necessary evil to ensure comprehensive pressure is applied, even if it's imperfect.
Okay, I see the argument.
However, the overarching conclusion from our deep dive into these sources is that the costs of that imperfection, the unfairness, the loss of credibility, the potential chilling effects are becoming too high.
That nuance is important. So given these significant challenges and the real costs of the current approach, what would a more effective, a more credible sanctions regime actually look like, according to our sources?
Yeah.
What's the path forward to maybe restore that confidence?
This raises an important question, doesn't it? And our sources offer a fairly clear vision for what a necessary evolution would involve.
Where?
It means fundamentally moving from performance to precision, shifting the focus.
Performance to precision. I like that.
Yeah. This requires abandoning those dragnet tactics we talked about in favor of evidence-based designations rooted in demonstrable culpability, real proof.
Okay.
It means ensuring that enforcement is calibrated to punish actual misconduct, not mistakes, making a clear distinction between deliberate evasion and genuine understandable compliance failures, given the complexity.
That sounds crucial.
And crucially, it means sanctions must be strategically designed to target the true economic and political engines sustaining Russia's war, the core structures, rather than, as we discussed, just those peripheral figures who might happen to orbit them.
So focus on the trunk, not the leaves.
Exactly. It's about a much sharper focus and a more credible, legally robust application to restore confidence in the tool itself so it remains effective for the future.
These sound like very sensible steps. Logical, even.
Mm-hmm.
But practically speaking, what are the biggest hurdles to actually moving from that performance mindset to precision? Is it like political will? Is it intelligence gathering capabilities?
Mm-hmm.
Or just the inherent difficulty of agreeing internationally on what demonstrable culpability actually looks like?
Honestly, it's probably all of those to varying degrees. Political will is paramount, absolutely. Shifting from the quick, visible wins of announcing long lists.
Right, the easy headlines.
To focusing on longer-term, harder-to-measure strategic impact requires real political courage and patience. Intelligence gathering is obviously crucial. You need solid, actionable intelligence to build those robust evidence-based cases, and that's not always easy to acquire, let alone share effectively across different nations with different interests.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, agreeing on what constitutes demonstrable culpability across diverse legal systems and political viewpoints is a huge challenge in itself.
Mm-hmm.
It requires much greater international cooperation, maybe harmonization of standards, and a real commitment to due process that can sometimes feel frustratingly slower than the immediate demand for action in a crisis.
Sounds complex.
Very. But the argument is, without tackling these hurdles, the effectiveness and indeed the legitimacy of sanctions as a policy tool will just continue to erode.
Okay. So bringing it right back to our original question, the one that kicked off this whole deep dive, are Russian sanctions working?
Based on our sources, the uncomfortable truth is that, as currently designed and implemented, well, the answer leans toward no.
Leans toward no.
Yeah. They have become, as one source memorably put it, a theater of toughness. A signal of resolve intended to project strength and action.
Mm-hmm.
But without that sharper focus and credible application that we've outlined, without true precision and a stronger commitment to fairness and the rule of law, they will indeed remain, as the title suggests, more symbol than solution.
Wow.
And the long-term risk isn't just that they won't achieve their immediate goals regarding Moscow, but that they could undermine the very idea of sanctions as a credible, effective tool for dealing with future global challenges.
This deep dive has really shown us, I think, that good intentions aren't always enough for effective policy, that the path to real impact is often far more complex, far more nuanced than it might appear on the surface.
Absolutely. Complexity is key.
It really makes you think about how we evaluate success in foreign policy more broadly. So maybe a final thought for you to ponder. What other global policies, maybe designed with the very best of intentions, might also be missing the mark on precision and credibility? Perhaps hiding systemic flaws beneath a veneer of well-meaning action.
That's a great question to reflect on.
Something to think about until next time on The Deep Dive.